you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
You're a fan of college basketball. You, of course, know that music for CBS's coverage of March Madness. The play-in games begin tomorrow night. UCLA taking part in one of those against Michigan. And we've also got the tournament as a whole in Indianapolis Friday. That's going to be a day full of games, 4 days, as typically the schedule a little bit rejiggered as a result of the modified bubble in which the teams find themselves in Indianapolis. Joining us to talk about the logistics for this very different March Madness is health and medicine reporter for the Indianapolis Star, Sherry Radofsky. Sherry, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Describe for us, first of all, what the city is like right now.
Well, it's still pretty quiet. Our weather just warmed up, so it's hard to tell if the people who are outside on the streets are fans who've come in from elsewhere or just residents who are finally glad to be able to get outside and walk around. But I think, you know, we're going to start to see excitement and numbers build over the next 3 weeks.
And what are the capacity guidelines for fans attending the tournament games?
So the NCAA has set capacity guidelines of up to 25% capacity. But there are some of the venues, for instance, they're playing in Assembly Hall down in Bloomington. IU's home. They're only allowing 500 fans. So although fans are allowed, it's not going to look like a typical March Madness game where, you know, you kind of have people packed into the rafters. Even for the finals, it will only be up to 25% at Lucas Oil Stadium, which is a football stadium. So again, a football stadium looks pretty empty at one quarter full.
As we've seen at some of those NFL games this past season, what are the venues that are being used to accommodate all these games?
There are a couple of venues in central Indiana, Indianapolis. There's the State Fairgrounds. There's, as I said, Lucas Oil, where the Indianapolis Colts play. There's Bankers Life Fieldhouse, home to the Indiana Pacers. And then there's also Hinkle Fieldhouse, home to Butler's Bulldogs. And then IU's Assembly Hall and Purdue's, I think it's Mackey Arena up there.
So the amount of production equipment to do all these games at all these different venues must be extraordinary. Because remember, typically when you've got all these games taking place on the opening weekend of the tournament, they're spread out at regionals all across the country. Here, these games all in one city, essentially. You must have production trucks all over the place.
Haven't seen that yet. I mean, it may be happening. I don't know. You know, I don't know where they're parking. It's pretty restricted. I mean, the hotels are, they're really trying to create a kind of mini bubble around these teams. So I think the primary emphasis is on keeping the players safe and healthy and not kind of having it be a large free-for-all. I haven't really seen that many production trucks around. They may be parking outside of the, you know,
yeah, they'll be there
area.
At some point. what about the bubble in which the players find themselves? How far reaching is the bubble in which they'll be?
So the NCAA has laid out guidelines, so it will be pretty far reaching. I mean, they've made it clear that you should not expect to see any of these players in restaurants, bars. They are staying kind of on dedicated floors of hotels. They will be tested pretty much daily to make sure that no one becomes positive with COVID-19. There's our local health system, IU Health System, has sort of dedicated an area of its pathology lab to doing all these tests. They estimate that over the next couple of weeks, they may do as many as 30,000 tests just around the NCAA community. And then the other thing that the NCAA has done is they're going to be asking players to wear devices which will basically register when they're in close contact with one another. So should one of those players or team members test positive, they'll be able to take a look at that device and see who was exposed to that player for sufficient time to require quarantine under the CDC guidelines.
We're talking with Sherry Radovsky, who is health and medicine reporter for the Indianapolis Star, about the city's preparation for the NCAA tournament. Also with us, ESPN college basketball writer Myron Metcalf. Myron, good to have you with us. What more can you share with us about the extent of the testing and the health obligations on the players, coaching staff, and others there for the tournament?
Well, I mean, the process starts, you know, long before these players get there. They've got to test negative 7 days in a row in order to arrive in Indianapolis. And then once they arrive, they're quarantined. Certainly a lot of precautions in place. A team like Virginia, which had to withdraw from the ACC tournament after a positive test within its program, has not even arrived in Indianapolis yet as a result of those protocols. They hope to get there by Thursday and meet some of the guidelines by Friday. So it is certainly a strict bubble, as much of a bubble as you can have in that kind of environment. There were six officials, one tested positive, five others were around that official. They were sent home earlier this week. So I think the NCAA is doing a good job of trying to make sure that this tournament goes forward without any significant issues.
Now, for the teams that win in their two games this weekend, they're going to go out of the bubble, right? Because they're going to go back to their schools, their home location. So they're going to have to then be continuously tested in that interim period when they can't be in a bubble.
Teams aren't leaving the bubble. If you win in advance, you stay in the bubble. So there is certainly a circumstance where the teams that reach the Final Four are going to spend nearly a month in their bubble in Indianapolis. So I think the NCAA was quite concerned about the scenario you described, teams coming back and forth. So that's not going to happen. Once you are in the bubble, you are in the bubble. And based on the conversations I've had with coaches and teams, they have packed for the next month.
Wow.
Hoping that they're there 4 weeks from now.
So what effect do you think that's going to have on players and staff, particularly as we go deeper into the tournament?
Well, I think it's already had a major effect. You have to remember, these schools and teams have been dealing with this for a year now. This isn't new. So I've talked to a lot of coaches who think, you know, we're actually used to some of the protocols. We've been doing this for so long, so it's not new to us. But I do think every team in the country is dealing with a level of mental fatigue that is hard to measure and analyze and assess. It's different depending on the player, the coach, the staff. But I know a lot of coaches are trying to do their best to try to make Indianapolis feel like home. They brought video games and, you know, they've brought, you know, golf putting mats and things to try to make these guys feel like they have a way to escape a little bit in between games.
We're talking with Myron Metcalf of ESPN college basketball writer, Sherry Radovsky of the Indianapolis Star, to give us the scene locally there, where multiple venues in Indianapolis will host the games of this year's March Madness NCAA college basketball. If you have questions about how it's being operated this year or even about specific teams, we're at 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Again, UCLA, USC, UC Santa Barbara, San Diego State. We've got four Southern California teams that are there for the start of the tournament. We'll come back and continue our conversation in just 1 minute. Coming up next hour, we'll have the very latest for you on the tragic attack at three massage parlors in the greater Atlanta area. Law enforcement there has some more information gleaned from conversations with the suspect in the multiple killings, which eight people were shot and killed. We'll have more details. That's coming up next hour. On a much lighter note, our focus right now is on March Madness, which gets underway tomorrow evening, UCLA and Michigan, in one of those play-in games ahead of Friday's full-scale day-long first series of games in the tournament. And if you have questions for our guests about March Madness, we're at 866-893-KPECC. Myron Metcalf, ESPN college basketball writer. What happens if a player or a staff member on one of the teams tests positive for COVID? What happens? What is the confirmation process? And if that person is determined to have COVID-19, is the team out?
That's a good question. If a player tests positive, NCAA officials will then use their contact tracing mechanisms. Players are wearing sensors, so they have the ability to tell how long an individual has been around that individual who tested positive. So they'll go to that. And that process certainly could eliminate a team. But the NCAA has also cautioned that they will allow a team to play with five players. So if you can only get five players onto the court this weekend and that's all you have available, they will let you go forward. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how it all works out. But Virginia's a team that had one positive test. They're not in Indianapolis yet as a result of the contact tracing measures that they had. Kansas withdrew from the Big 12 tournament with a positive test, multiple positive tests. They're in Indianapolis, but we're not sure if they're going to be full strength. It doesn't look like they will be, at least for their first game. So there is certainly the potential that one positive test within a program could eliminate them. And if that happens, then the team they were scheduled to play will advance.
Myron, do we know, in the case of Virginia, because that's a great example, do we know there whether through contact tracing they determined they didn't have a minimum five players to be able to get a team on the court, or that maybe they had more than five players, but because just of concerns over the health and safety of players, they chose to withdraw? Do we know?
Well, remember, they withdrew from the ACC tournament last week. So they withdrew, I think, out of an abundance of caution, because the goal is to be ready to play this week. And they have not given the NCAA any indication that they won't have the five players. There are two important deadlines. Saturday teams had to tell the NCAA if they didn't feel like they'd be able to go forward, potentially get replaced. The final deadline for that was Tuesday night. No team told the NCAA that they couldn't move forward. So Virginia certainly believes that it will have the minimum number of players for its first game. However, you don't know who's going to be available. You don't know how they have been affected. So that'll be sort of the unknown with everything that's happening this week.
Myron, I know the first round of games are typically lopsided. We occasionally get upsets, but these, because of seedings, are the less competitive games. In the first Friday and Saturday's round of games, are there any matchups you think are particularly intriguing?
Yeah, I think Texas versus Abilene Christian University could be a great game. Abilene Christian is great defense, forced more turnovers per possession than any team in America. Playing a good Texas team, but I think that could be a good game there. Winthrop in the South region versus Villanova. Villanova lost its point guard, Colin Gillespie, to a torn MCL a couple weeks ago, and they haven't looked like the same team. So I think Villanova is certainly vulnerable in that game. I think those are the two biggest ones for me. Georgetown, maybe a third, playing Colorado in the first round. Georgetown wasn't very good during the season, regular season. Patrick Ewing is their coach, leads them to the Big East Championship, and now they're one of the hottest teams in America.
We also have several local teams from Southern California. UCLA playing Michigan State tomorrow night. The winner plays BYU in an opening round game. UCLA-Michigan State, your thoughts about that matchup?
That's a good game. It's two teams that, you know, weren't really able to find themselves consistently. I think UCLA, you got to give them credit. Losing Chris Smith, an important player for them, to an ACL injury. They kind of regathered. Johnny Juzang, Cody Riley, other players on that team came together. Mick Cronin has been a great coach. So I think that'll be an interesting matchup. Michigan State was sort of out of the field. I don't think a lot of people thought that they would get in, but they played their way in with some late victories throughout the season. So they're better than they've looked maybe in the first half of the year. So it should be a good game.
We also have USC playing the winner of Wichita State and Drake, the Trojans, with a sixth seed.
Evan Mobley is going to be a top three pick in the NBA draft. And I think he's a star that a lot of people on the East Coast have not seen yet. So I think he has a lot to offer, and he'll be fun to watch. That USC team, when Evan Mobley plays well, they can compete with the best teams in America. So it's going to be interesting to see how the young guy, he's a freshman, meets the moment.
Yeah. Always tough for the winner of the Big West. Only one team from that conference gets in. It's the Gauchos of UC Santa Barbara, and they're going to be playing Creighton in their first round matchup. Always tough for the Big West winner.
Yeah, the Gauchos have played some good basketball, and I think Ja'Cory McLaughlin is one of the top players in America. A lot of people haven't seen him, but he's good. They're not going to back down from anybody. And I think the Creighton team is one that has had some ups and downs. Their coach, Greg McDermott, made racially insensitive comments a couple weeks ago, and they haven't looked the same since. So I think the Gauchos are going to be right there with Creighton in a good game.
All right, that'll be coming up on Sunday. Thank you so much, Myron. We appreciate it very much. You're sharing your expertise on the March Madness matchups. College basketball writer for ESPN, Myron Metcalf, and Sherry Radovsky of the Indianapolis Star joining us. Thank you so much, Sherry. Just a quick word on to what degree are public health officials concerned in Indy about all these folks coming?
Well, I think they feel that they can trust, certainly that they can trust restaurants, bar owners, hotel staff to do what needs to be done to encourage people to stay safe, to keep their masks on, to socially distance. Health officials note that our numbers have declined recently, which is certainly a good thing. That's certainly a much better scenario than playing this with case numbers going on the upswing. Our local Marion County Health Department director has said that she is more concerned about people going away on spring break and bringing coronavirus back to central Indiana than.
All right. Thank you so much, Sherry Radovsky, joining us from the Indianapolis Star. It's Air Talk on KPCC.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.